The Rapid Equipping Force and the Asymmetric Warfare Group, two organizations the Army created in response to specific challenges in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, they're now a permanent part of the Army. And its leaders say they're still highly relevant, even after the withdrawal of large-scale combat troops. Colonel Steve Sliwa is the director of the Rapid Equipping Force, and Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Lee is the squadron commander for the Asymmetric Warfare Group. They tell DOD reporter Jared Serbu about their enduring missions in a post-war environment.
We've had different initiatives during combat, for other QRCs, quick reaction capabilities, to provide capability on the battlefield when needed. And unfortunately, a lot of those organizations have gone away only to be reinvented during other times of need and occasionally fully supported. And depending on the length of the effort, you know, sometimes go away again. So I think in the case of the demonstrated capability that the U.S. Army Rapid Equipping Force has provided for the soldier for the last 13 years, I think the Army leadership was quite visionary in keeping it at a time when the Army is getting smaller. It was a very conscious decision by the leadership at a time when the Army was getting smaller to invest in this organization so it could have the capacity and the capability in the future and not have to start from a cold start. It's a very unpredictable world, perhaps more unpredictable than some of the eras previously, particularly maybe during the Cold War era. So to have that technical edge and having that kind of organization all the time, I think was quite visionary of our leadership.
Right, and for Asymmetric Warfare Group, you know, we were established as a result of the war in Iraq with the IEDs. The IEDs were killing more soldiers than direct fire, indirect fire, suicide vehicles. So, you know, it was a complex environment at that time, and they needed an organization that could rapidly come up with solutions, observe the problems, come up with rapid solutions, and enhance soldier survivability. And that's our main goal. We don't know where we're going to fight next. You know, it's a complex world. As the Army operating concept states, we have to be prepared to fight and win and compel our enemies in that complex world. We're not going to have time the next go round to spend a year or two developing organizations that can close these gaps. We have to be ready to go immediately, day one. With a smaller force structure, we got to be able to fight and win today.
And I think you alluded to this morning. At the time the IED threat was really coming into full fruition, there was no AWG. I don't think there was a REF either.
No. And you know, I think what really drove the creation of the organizations is the Army has capabilities to close those gaps, but it takes a long time. You know, the establishment to come up with material solutions takes years in a POM cycle, and it's driven by money and those cycles. Well, when soldiers are dying, you don't have time for that. You have to be able to come up with a solution immediately and as quickly as possible, and that's why we're now both part of TRADOC. I think we work better together as organizations, sister organizations within TRADOC, and we can coordinate quicker and be more responsive to the soldiers.
Also, you know, we have the expectation of, you know, the great citizenry out there is if the expectation of speed to action, which is phenomenal in this modern era on how fast the United States can employ and conduct operations, really, I have to go back to, is it worth the modest investment to keep a warm organization and to suggest that we've moved from a hot organization to a warm? We are getting just as many requirements today as we were probably 2 or 3 years ago. They're just different. And it's a dangerous place out there. And I couldn't imagine taking the organization down only to wish that we had rebuilt it on another day at another unique event.
Right. So how do your roles and how do your organizations look different, operate differently compared to decade-long counterinsurgency-focused operations to where we're heading now, where we're not entirely sure who the enemy is going to be and what the fight is going to look like?
I think that's the exact reason, part of the Army's vision in keeping both organizations. You've got two very flexible organizations that can really kind of gauge the soldier. I won't speak for AWG, but you know, can certainly track technology and understand what's in the art of the possible and how it can make a difference as we enter into some of those unique challenges that are presented to us. Our adversaries use COTS and, you know, against the United States. Some of the counters to those COTS may come from the same sectors of industry to counter some of those things, and it's certainly proven that the speed of applying select COTS and government off-the-shelf technologies is considerable.
our core mission stays the same. We want to enhance soldier survivability, but we have reorganized somewhat to face the operating environment. So with the drawdown in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, the Army has moved globally. You know, the pivot to the Pacific with Pacific Pathways, there's a focus over there. So our squadrons now, our operational squadrons are regionally aligned. So we have one squadron focused on Africa and Europe. We have a squadron focused on Southcom, Northcom, and then the Pacific. And then we have one squadron that maintains a focus in CENTCOM AOR. So it has changed how we are organized, but it has broadened our scope. We now see global trends. And a lot of these trends, these threat trends that we see, are transnational and they're different regions. So we can, now that we're focused and we're out in over 38 countries just in the past 6 months, you know, we do get to see those trends, and that's a little bit how it's changed us.
Say a little bit more, if you could, about why TRADOC is the right home for both of your organizations, and then how AWG and the REF synergize, work together.
Well, TRADOC builds the Army. They're the force generators. So everybody that comes in through TRADOC is trained by TRADOC. You go back as your professional military education, you touch TRADOC. So the lessons that we learn, whether it's a material solution or non-material, doctrine, tactics, techniques, and procedures, I think it's great that we're in TRADOC because we can turn that right back around to the institution and get it into the schoolhouses. So soldiers don't have to wait until they get to their operational unit to maybe learn some of these doctrines, this doctrine and these TTPs. It gets institutionalized. And the only way you ever change anything in the Army is if you can change it in the institution. If it becomes doctrine, if it becomes a POI in a course, or if it becomes a program of record, if it's a piece of equipment. So, you know, TRADOC is the right place for that.
You know what Lieutenant Colonel Lee mentioned about programs of record? All those starts with a requirements document that are developed by an agency within TRADOC. So what a better place to place the REF to give a great insight to emerging requirements on the battlefield through working very closely with gaps that are sent in by soldiers that we attempt to close with COTS and GOTS. And you know what? Some of those may lead us down certain developmental paths to get the requirement extremely refined or farther down the road in getting to whether something really needs to be a program of record or not in order to conserve Army dollars for the things that absolutely must be programs of record. So I think it's the natural place for the Army to place the organization, particularly with that thought pattern of we are seeing requirements come from the battlefield. We have a direct connection with the soldier. We can share those with TRADOC. They can do the analysis. Is this a one place, one time? Is this a broader issue for the Army? And oh, by the way, REF, what were you able to do about it? And what's in the art of the possible? So I think it's a natural place for the REF to operate.
Colonel, you said this morning, I think, that the REF was a little bit reactive in its early days, probably of necessity because of the environment that you were in. And I think you want to take this organization to be a little bit more forward-looking. Can you talk about some ways in which you're going to do that?
So we are a reactive organization because typically we're responding to something that a soldier or a commander or a unit has encountered on the battlefield, and they have to have that encounter sometimes for us to be able to respond with an appropriate solution. So they encounter it, we respond, we try to close the gap. However, I believe that there are certain gaps out there that we are going to experience in the future through the unique environment of triple canopy, subterranean operations, where we can kind of get a really good feel for what the gaps may be. And I'd like to start leaning towards technological solutions, you know, in order to close those gaps before it becomes a demand signal for somebody actually operating in that environment. So you asked earlier about talking about, you know, how does AWG and REF work together? This is the perfect venue. We've been able to partner together on some really challenging issues, counter UAS, subterranean operations, the REF being the material arm, the AWG working the TTPs and directly with training the soldiers. It's a natural, supportive, complementary, but not duplicative effort that we can engage in as a partners in TRADOC.
I think part of what you said your mission was this morning was to try to imagine all of the potential bad things a bad guy could do with a suite of commercial technologies and then basically try to figure out how to defeat that, right?
Correct.
You want to give us an example of the kind of work you're doing in that area?
We have been doing that with the commercial off-the-shelf unmanned aerial systems, but I don't want to go into too much detail because, you know, we basically did everything that we could think of. I don't want to give anybody any ideas. because they are very capable systems, and they're global. It's a global problem. ISR, I'll say, ISR is not going to be a U.S.-only technique anymore. Everybody now has the opportunity to have their own ISR platform, and it's very cheap. And, you know, what we have to look at and what our direction is from the TRADOC commander, General Perkins, is, you know, we can't come up with a $5 million solution to a $500 problem. You know, these systems are very cheap and inexpensive. They'll break us. So we have to come up with innovative, rapid innovation to defeat these systems. Otherwise, they're going to break the bank.
Jared, both organizations are in the Army structure today to increase the rate of innovation in the Army, whether it be training, whether it be material solutions. If you go to the TRADOC website today and go to the tab that says innovation, you're going to find the homepage for the AWG and for the REF. We're very proud of that, and we're driven to make sure that we can follow through with the charge that our leadership has given us.